Members, we will call the meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. We now have 11 members, which is a quorum. We will have Representative Crawford. Did you get a chance to look at the minutes and approve it? Representative Crawford moves approval of the minutes from our last meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Crawford. We will jump right into it, members. We are going to start with Senate File 194, Representative Mazerall. Please proceed whenever you're ready. And if you could go ahead and move, we're working off of the Senate file, members, so if you want to go ahead and move Senate File 194, we can get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will refer or move Senate File 194 for referral to the Civil Law Committee.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed whenever you're ready.
Pat Mazerall, representative from District 41B. Mr. Chair, members, this Senate file is one that clarifies some revisions to Article 9 of the Uniform Commercial Code. It's a bill that is largely cleanup provisions of Article 9 with one or two substantive clarification changes. Those are included in a summary that was in your packet. The bill was proposed by the Uniform Law Commissioners. It has been reviewed by the Minnesota State Bar Association, which is fully supportive and which requests the support of this committee. I have with me Attorney Gene Hennig to testify regarding the bill.
Thank you, Representative Mazerall. Nice job, Mr. Hennig. Welcome to the committee. Nice to have you here. Always nice to see constituents in St. Paul.
Thank
Please
you very much.
Identify yourself for the record and start whenever you're ready.
Yes, my name again is Gene Hennig. I'm a private lawyer here in Minneapolis, but I'm really here on behalf of the Minnesota Uniform Law Commissioners, of which I am one. And we bring this bill to you for your consideration. I'm happy to report that as I speak, the Senate has already passed this bill, so we're hopeful that it will receive similar treatment here. I am here to talk to you about Article 9 of the Uniform Commercial Code, which is a great after-lunch topic of conversation. When I first went to law school about 40 years ago now, it never occurred to me that I would have any interest whatsoever in this subject. Indeed, I didn't know what a secured transaction was. I suspect that many of you perhaps don't know what one is either, and so maybe it would help if I just gave you a little bit of an overview of what it is that we're talking about and why it is that it's important for your consideration. This is a bill that I might also say was substantially, or part of the law which was substantially amended 10 years ago. Back then, Representative Tim Pawlenty was our author, and it passed through quite nicely. And I tell you that only to pique your interest because it was one of his claims to glory which has taken him to where he is today. So please pay attention. This is an important piece of legislation.
Representative Mazerall, is there anything you'd like to announce to the committee?
Mr. Chair, not at all.
Thank you.
I am listening.
Anyway, we're here to talk about a piece of the Uniform Commercial Code, and in particular, the law of secured transactions. What is that, very briefly? First of all, it has very little to do with back to where I started. We're talking about secured transactions, and that has very little to do with security, so get that word out of your head. What we're really talking about, though, is the law of liens against personal property. And a very easy way for you to understand that, most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with what a mortgage is. Perhaps you've got a mortgage on your house. That is a lien against real estate. What we're talking about at the moment, though, are liens against personal property. And this law is terribly important for just about everybody in our society. I don't care whether you're a business person, a small business person, or a big business person, whether you're a consumer, no matter where you are, at one time or another, either in business or as a consumer, you've had to borrow money, and you have used as collateral a security interest against the car. The name of the lien, which we call, it's not a mortgage lien, but it's called a security interest. The law which governs all of this stuff is found in the Uniform Commercial Code, and in particular Article 9. Article 9, as I said, was significantly amended about 10 years ago. What we're talking about now are some further amendments to Article 9. This is a law which has been on the books here in Minnesota since the mid-60s, and now we are trying to clean it up just a bit. There are many technical pieces of this act which we could spend all afternoon talking about, but in the interest of your time, I will cut to the chase and tell you what probably is the most significant change to it and why it is really that this is a very important piece of legislation. In your handout materials, which I think all of you should have, it's a two-page handout, if I'm correct, and on the third page there's a form that says example on it. Okay, what this is an example of is something called the UCC financing statement. Again, let me just share with you why this is a big deal and why it's important. If you think again of what a mortgage is and how that works with your house, if you grant somebody a mortgage, what does the mortgage holder, the bank, do with it? Well, they go and they record it, usually with the county recorder or with the registrar of titles. And why do they do that? Well, they do that to put the world on notice that a lender has a lien against your real estate. Similarly, when we're talking about secured transactions, we have to put the world on notice. And the way that's done is with this wonderful document called the UCC Financing Statement. It's a very simple document. It was frankly designed for anybody to use. It's filled out, and it recites the fact that a particular creditor has a particular security interest or lien against a particular debtor's property. This lien then gets filed with, or this statement gets filed with, the Minnesota Secretary of State's office. So far, so good. It's easy enough to understand. One of the problems, though, that has been encountered with these UCC financing statements is getting the debtor's name right on it. You'd think that this would be a terribly easy problem to address. Turns out, though, it's not. Debtors have all kinds of last names, and first names, and middle names. Some people, like Prince, want to make a number out of their name. Others have foreign names. And it gets to be very difficult to figure out what's a person's really true legal name. If you look at the example that I gave you, for example, and if you look at the arrow there, this particular debtor was a farmer. This is patterned after a real case. This particular debtor was a farmer. His last name was Kindernecht, which is a good German last name with lots of letters in it. You'd think nobody could mess up or get confused by this fellow's name. And they got his name there as Kindernecht Terry J. That's how they listed him here. Well, when this financing statement was used in a real court in Kansas, it was determined that it was no good. And the reason was is they didn't have the debtor's true full legal name there. His true full legal name, just for your information, was Terence Joseph Kindernecht. He had never been called that, I would submit to you, since the day he was baptized. Right? He was Terry Kindernecht. That's who he was. But because there was confusion over getting the debtor's name right, this particular filing failed. Well, where is the law going? The new amendments, which we're asking you to consider adopting, addresses this problem, getting the debtor's name right on these financing statements. And they're doing it by now looking towards whatever it is that's on the person's driver's license. Most all of us have driver's licenses. And so for going forward, we'd look at a driver's license. Whatever the name is there, that's the name that goes on these financing statements. It may strike you as being just a trivial thing, but I can assure you that in many cases there are millions, indeed billions of dollars at stake if these things are misfiled, because in bankruptcy you lose your lien if this is not properly filed. And so for these reasons and others, this act is important. As I said before, we could talk about this at length, but I think I've given you a flavor for what the act is all about. The other pieces of it are largely technical in nature. This act has passed the Senate, and it's on its way to being considered and adopted by all of the other 50 states. Our ultimate goal is to get this adopted in the current session, and then there will be a uniform effective date, for this amendment in all the states in the United States that's targeted for July 1 of 2013. So it's still a little bit out until everybody comes online with it, but hopefully we will get there. Finally, I can tell you that I know of no real opposition to this. It's been reviewed by our own Bar Association here and by other interested groups. It has, obviously, it's coming to you as a uniform law and has received a lot of careful attention nationwide. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or
whatever. Thank you, Mr. Heading. I don't see any questions.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you do.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, this is very important, Mr. Henning, to answer correctly. I've got another bill that you're working on. Do you promise to go along with what I want to do on that one?
Well, Representative Mullery, I'm generally supportive of what you're doing as long as we get some definitions cleaned up. And yes, I'd be happy to continue working with you.
Well, that's a pretty good answer on that first question. But I think you need to be warned when you're in the House saying that the Senate passed something, especially if you would have said unanimously, we'd be really worried about it.
Excuse me.
Second thing is, I remember when you business lawyers really screwed up the real property law on contracts for deed in the last major thing, which you still haven't, and I hope you're not screwing things up as much on this one, and I haven't had a chance to study it, but about a year ago I was at a UCC meeting here over at the Radisson, where they were there for 2 days, and there was issues like this, a lot more. Is this all they could agree? I know there was huge fights over where to put a comma and things like that for 2 days. Is this all they could come up with out of that meeting?
Oh, there is much more, Representative Mullery.
Or you got that someplace else.
Well, I'd be happy to visit with you privately at length, if you wish. Seriously, there are a number of technical things that came to bear. I mean, the world is far more complex now than when the code was originally adopted, and even 10 years ago, and this is largely a cleanup bill. A lot of the work, too, is being done in the comments to these sections, so not to make light of it, this is an important bill, and it does address some issues that like the one I just talked about.
So just the final one, Mr. Chair, then this is just kind of the initial easy one, and you got more coming.
Well,
maybe not this year.
Not this year, Representative Mullery. If we live long enough, there will be more, I'm sure.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. Members, any other questions? If not, Representative Mazarol renews his motion that Senate File 194 be passed in, where are we sending this? To civil law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Henning. Congratulations, Representative Mazarol.
Thank you.
Chairman Hoppe, House File 657.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We are back. We had testimony on this last Tuesday or Wednesday last week. It's my understanding we have at least one testifier that didn't get to finish, and we would like to have him give him the opportunity to finish. We also have another testifier that wants to come and speak about the bill.
That'll be just fine, Mr. Chairman. Would you like to move the author's amendment? We would like the testifiers at this time to come down to the table. Is Randy Levy in the... There is a cross. Excellent. Hi. Sir, if you could introduce yourself for the record and please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Peter Berglund, a resident in Shoreview, Minnesota, just here as a private party speaking about the bill. Should I just start then?
Yes, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. I'm new to this. I'm terribly opposed to ticket scalping. And when I look at this bill, it looks as if you folks are trying to regulate the sale, the resale of tickets, put into place rules on the reselling of tickets. And my recommendation would be scrap this process, just go back to the way it used to be where ticket scalping was illegal. I think it's horribly, horribly wrong that people can take tickets and resell them for a higher value when we're dealing with events that occur at a place that's locked in time, it's locked in location, especially if they're, if these events are like the sporting events, at playoff games, or you know, if we ever got the Super Bowl here, that kind of thing, where it's locked in time, it's locked in place. The people raising the prices of tickets encourages counterfeiting. It encourages people that are lucky enough to be at the front of the line, who can then purchase extra tickets, more than they need, with the idea that they're going to turn around and sell them back to brokers who will then inflate the price. So another thing, the legislature and the Hennepin County have allowed the Twins, revenue from taxes to pay for the building of the Twins Stadium. And now the people of the residents of Hennepin County are paying extra in taxes. They're paying extra in scalped tickets. And even just recently, the Twins have set up a contract with, I think it's Fox Cable, where a person has to pay extra for cable fees to watch games. So it's horribly, horribly messed up now in the sense of money is very, the cost of watching the games on TV, the cost of buying tickets, it's all skyrocketing. I wish we could just go back and make scalping illegal again. The Twins and the Vikings, they sell themselves to us as an asset to our community, yet the community suffers with paying exorbitant amounts for tickets. They're going to pay extra cable fees. Ramsey County is talking about a sales tax to pay for a stadium if the Vikings set up shop in Arden Hills. So please scrap this bill and just make scalping illegal again. I'll take questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Berglund. Members, do you have any questions for Mr. Berglund? Seeing none at this time, we thank you very much, Mr. Berglund, for your testimony.
Thank you for letting me speak.
Absolutely. This time, Mr. Levy, if you want to come to the table, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, fellow chairs and committee members. I'm Randy Levy. I own the WeFest up in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, and I own a company called Rose Presents. And I have presented concerts mostly around Minnesota at the old St. Paul Arena, at Target Center, at Metrodome in its better days. For many, many years. I think I started presenting concerts in 1974, so it gives me a little bit of background on this. I'll try to keep my comments relatively brief, but I do think sometimes with issues it is possible to get on the wrong side of an issue inadvertently, and I know it may sound silly. Sometimes you meet somebody in a bar, you think they're the greatest person, but maybe later after a little bit of walking and talking and dinners and finding out more of the facts, it may turn out that person's not the greatest person. And I think there's an analogy, that analogy here is that you've been approached by StubHub and related people who feel you should vote for this bill. Yet, this is one of those strange times that all of us against this bill, every sports team, University of Minnesota, our state fair, the grandstand people, every facility, Duluth, Mankato, Rochester, Target Center, everybody that's in our business, sports and entertainment, we're all against the bill. So we're kind of knocking hard on your heads here going, give us a listen. That said, what happened, you gave us a week to come back, and thank you for allowing me to offer this testimony. And even in this last week, we have had a chance to dig up some more facts that will be helpful to you in your decision. David Balser from the Target Center was able to dig up some facts on the first Miley Cyrus Hannah Montana show, which allowed, there were no non-transferable tickets. 50% of the tickets were sold outside the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Wisconsin and Iowa. 50%. It is safe to say 50% of the crowd did not fly in for this show. His evidence is the second show, also at Target Center. Because there was a non-transferable ticket, 99% of the tickets were sold to people from Minnesota, the Dakotas, Iowa, and Wisconsin. So we as an industry, we have this problem. We've become an electronic industry. We sell tickets paperless. We sell them on the phone. We sell them at outlets. We sell tickets any way we can. I remember selling out the Rolling Stones via mail order. So we would get 300,000 orders for tickets to try to fill 15,000 seats. You have been given that letter from the Target Center. You can see these facts. Similarly, they took the first five rows of Chelsea Handler, our controversial comedian. 50% of those tickets were sold outside of our five states. Josh Groban, who just recently went on sale for Target Center, had a non-transferable ticket in the first five rows, non-transferable. 93% of the tickets were sold to people who live here, Minnesota, Iowa, Dakotas, and Wisconsin. So our facts that we've only been able to assemble for 1 week are showing us that if we open the door to the legislation as proposed, we are opening the door to about half the audience having to pay a scalp ticket price for the very same seat. My side of it is, I do a lot of shows. I do shows at First Avenue. I do shows at theaters and arenas. When somebody's paying $500 for a ticket, or $300, or $200, or $400, and maybe the ticket costs $25, or $50, or $75, my state's not getting the additional sales tax money. My neighboring restaurants are probably going to be cheated out of a meal. I'm not going to get people to another show. They've burned all their money on this particular show. Most people have finite budgets. So it's not really healthy for my industry to see you vote in favor of this law. In fact, when somebody spends $300 or $400 for scalp tickets, they probably will go to less events. All of this rolls downhill. Less events means less jobs, means less. So our appeal here, I'm sorry, you have also a letter from, I believe, CAA or William Morris. It says WME or CAA. CAA it is. Coincidentally, the managing director, Creative Artists Agency, is one of the two largest entertainment agencies in the world. These agents drive me crazy. You think you guys drive me crazy, these guys can drive me crazy. This particular agent is Hannah Montana's agent. He is trying to say to you that given a choice and over time, whether they play here, they play Omaha, they play Des Moines, they play Kansas City, they play St. Louis, they play Chicago or Milwaukee, he may have room for two dates on the tour that's going to be in our neck of the woods. He may be trying to jam five of them into New York, five of them into L.A., God knows how many in Dallas or Atlanta, and just simply some markets that are bigger than us. I'm also appealing to our simple economic sense. Let's not put ourselves at what I would experience as a disadvantage. I will give you one other example, and I will wind myself down. I promote the Eagles here. It's very possible sometime, someplace, some way, some shape or form, the Eagles would say to me, we have a tour, and we want to make sure that those 500 seats right in front are non-transferable, or those 1,000 seats in front. It's just up to them, and they want to sell them to their orange juice sponsor or to whoever they want to, who will then offer them to the public at face value. And then I would say, well, I can't do that. Our state has this law that everything has to be transferable. It's just something we got mixed up in. that agent, that manager would say, fine, put in Des Moines for me, where I also promote them. Put in Moline for me, where I also promote them. They'll skip us. It's real. So I guess at this moment, I can wind this down by saying the best thing that could be that could happen is to table it, just to sit tight. Our industry is changing. I don't know that we're all right and that Chairman Hoppe is all wrong or vice versa. There is some give and take here. There are different ways to go at this, but you are making law and you know the responsibilities thereof. And before we make law, maybe it's time to step back and let's gather these facts over this next year. We can revisit this in certainly smaller groups than having to be in front of your Commerce Committee. And we can continue to show you how, if you allow us to regulate our own business, we will get more tickets at face value to the fans. That's all we care about. We just want to cut as much of the scalping out of this as we can. And there are a very, very few and select number of occasions that we're saying, you know, I think we need this to be non-transferable, or we're going to have every mom and housewife alive screaming at us that they're Miley Cyrus or whatever popular act at the time. Ticket costs 2 and 3 and 4 times face value because we didn't allow them to be non-transferable. We didn't. You didn't allow us to regulate ourselves is what it really boils down to. So with that, thank you, and peace, love, and happiness. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Levy. Members that have any questions, Mr. Levy? Seeing none, we thank you greatly for your testimony, for coming back to speak with us today. Chairman Hoppe?
I'm not aware of anybody else that wants to come and testify for or against the bill.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill?
And just to let members know, we had Mr. Pender kind of solidified what we were working off with the amendment the other day. So the DE1 amendment, and Mr. Pender, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the DE1 amendment is what we're working off of, and that's what would pass, and if we pass it, and be on the general register.
Any questions from any members? Chairman Hoppe, would you like any additional closing thoughts?
No, members, I appreciate your patience with this process and your support, and I'll renew my motion that House File 657 be passed and sent to the General Register as amended. Thank you.
It's the amendment from last week, correct? So it's as amended from last week.
Right.
Chairman Hoppe renews his motion that House File 657 as amended be passed and placed on the General Register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion does prevail. With that, members, that looks like the extent of our agenda, and we are adjourned.
Mr.